This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart, Joe De Leon. Good evening, good sir.
Blake, we're almost done with our position rankings. This is the last one that we got. It feels like we blew through these. Why do I feel like we started these so much earlier than last year? I don't know. Maybe I'm off on that, but we're done with these though. It's crazy how quickly we got through them.
Probably it's experience, you know, getting through. We were so gung-ho. The first time, but nevertheless, here we are. Today we go through our top five DBs in college football, which I think is going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. I will say I do think of all the lists that we've put together, for me, this has got to be the hardest list that I've done.
Yeah.
It's got to be the DBs. I think that you could legitimately have four guys at number one. Like, if you would have told me that I could do T1, like tied for first, I probably would have put four guys in there. And I'm dead honest. The fact that you won't allow me to do something like that, I don't have much debate here. Okay. You know, like, I mean, now I am very bullish on one player, which is going to be my number one guy here tonight, and Caleb Downs. I'll go ahead and admit it. But I'm just so high on him. Look, I legitimately think that this might be the best DB class that we've had in some time.
Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head there. This defensive back grouping that four of these guys are going to be in the 2025 NFL draft, it's a historic group. We might have a year where one safety goes in the top 15, which has not happened in a very long time, could even go in the top 10, and we'll talk about the guy in a little bit. There's a lot of really good corners, and then there's a freakishly good athlete that I don't really even know what position the guy plays. We don't know for sure if this is a safety, a corner, a receiver. Is he just a defensive weapon? I'm obviously referring to Travis Hunter. The reason why we say this is because Colorado deploys him on both sides of the football. So there's a really interesting debate that I think is going to come from two lists that are identical in terms of the guys that are on them, but there is a huge variance in how we've placed them on our individual lists.
We're not even a minute into the show. We're not even a minute into the show.
Okay, wait. This is directed at me. This is directed at me because I, last summer, doing some summer scouting, I was watching guys. I watched Zy Alexander at Southeastern Louisiana, and I really liked him.
Which is where I played.
Yeah, and I really liked him. And he didn't play that well this year for LSU. I don't even know if he really saw a ton of play.
Yeah, he started every game until he got hurt.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He underwhelmed, though. I thought that he was going to be a big riser during the draft cycle, and that did not come to fruition. So Ryan's just giving me shit.
Okay, I thought it was me. I mean, not only was it an LSU related, it also felt...
No, that's a shot at me.
Louisiana related. Ingrid says, Joe, I love the hat.
I'm not going to acknowledge any of those compliments.
I mean, you only got a couple more months, if we're being honest. If you're going to go through the whole time. I mean... I've told you you could take it off if you wanted to. You know, I'm not going to continue to let you do that.
No, I'm going to keep spouting nonsense, and I'm going to keep letting LSU get dragged down with me when I say crazy shit on the show, like happened with Texas A&M. So, no, I'm going to gladly keep wearing this hat.
You know, it still won't be as crazier as what Lincoln Riley's had to say.
Dude, the whole USC scheduling thing has been so stupid, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday in the open. Well, you're referring to the scheduling thing, right? That's what you're talking about?
Well, not only that, but I think he's using Cowherd to do the scheduling thing because him and Cowherd, it's pretty well known that they're boys. But Lincoln Riley's been in the news over the last week for two very bad reasons. And Joe, I got to be honest, it's a bad look on him. It continues to be bad looks on him. Now, I will say this, okay, to Lincoln Riley's defense. Number one, one bad year doesn't define him. One bad year of going 8-5 does not define him as a coach. Okay, like spare me on him being a bad coach. But the narrative about him is that he runs from adversity, right? And I think
there's a lot of truth in that.
But I understand if you're having to go cross country multiple times throughout the year and you don't have to play Notre Dame, why would you? Now, it stops a rivalry, and I get that. I wouldn't want to stop a rivalry either. I understand where they're coming from on the Notre Dame thing, though, right? Like, just because, like, if you're going across the country four times and one year you have to go five. And so for that, I understand it. But coaches like Kirby, Nick, Urban, whoever, they didn't care. They'd go wherever to play whomever.
Well, this is where I come down. It's USC. They need to be willing to play across country because it's the only way that they're going to be able to recruit other regions of the country. If they stay in their little bubble, and obviously they're playing in the Midwest, they're supposed to be a national brand. They've been depicted and...
Well, they are a national brand.
Yeah, but how much are we supposed to believe that if they take Notre Dame off their schedule? This is not... They're not actually going to do this. This was just what Cowherd threw out there. If you take Notre Dame off your schedule and then you put up this much of a fight in having to play an SEC program, why would I believe that you're claiming to be this national brand when you have...
Not playing Notre Dame doesn't not make them a national brand.
That rivalry is always going to get a national broadcast. It is always going to get a primetime slot broadcast, no matter even if these teams are bad. So I think that game is extremely important. I think it's very,
I'm not
very
saying
important.
It's not important. All I'm saying is that they could play the school of the deaf and blind 12 straight times. They're still going to be a national brand. You can't take away their past. If
that's true, but in the modern past 20 years, like outside of when Pete Carroll was there, what have they like really accomplished?
People would say, what has Notre Dame accomplished? Not me. They've been to a national title.
Okay, sorry. They've been to multiple college football playoffs and a national title.
Right. I agree with you. I agree with that. Look, it just comes off, if we're going to do the segment right now, and we could do it here, but it just comes off so bad for Lincoln. Okay, I thought we were going to get to it later, but it just comes off so, so bad for him that it looks like he runs scared. Like, Oklahoma people reporting, which it may or may not have been true, that he didn't want to go in the SEC. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think he got offered $10.5 million a year to go to USC, and he took it. But it just, like, why are y'all trying to get out of these games, right? Like, I don't buy the Fox Sports thing. Because why would Fox, okay, with both ESPN and them working together on all of this, why would Fox not want for the Big Ten or a Big Ten team to be the SEC team? It makes zero sense. So, for me, I just think it looks like they're running away cowardly. And, you know, the way that our nation, I'm going to be careful on how I say this because of what's happened today, but the way that our nation perceives West Coast schools and West Coast socialities, okay, if you will, is that it's soft. And I think that it plays into USC not being the tough program that they once were.
Yeah, this is the real kind of conclusion to the thought. It sums up, what are you laughing at? With the thing that Chris H said? Yeah, I saw it. It sums up, I think, the natural sentiment that I think everyone outside of the West Coast and outside of USC's fan base perceives them. And especially with Lincoln Riley, is that they're no longer the physical, aggressive, tough team that they were when they last were dominant, which was when Pete Carroll was there. They have been soft. They have been inconsistent. And the only way that you're going to get tougher is by scheduling more difficult games on your schedule for recruits to want to have the excitement to play in Las Vegas, to be on and have a national game and to play another national brand. Recruits don't get excited about getting to play Northwestern, which is now one of their potential opponents in the Big Ten. They get excited about being on NBC at 7 o'clock at night and going to South Bend. They get excited about being in a premier time slot. Everybody's talking about it when they lay a big hit and everyone is giving them props and talking about all the great things they've done. No one cares what you do against Northwestern. Nobody cares what you do against Purdue. They care, and you build a legacy against the biggest opponents in the country.
Okay, fair, but they're taking off. They would be taking essentially off Notre Dame and adding Ohio State and Michigan, which combined are obviously bigger than Notre Dame. So I understand Cowherd and what he said in reference to I'm not saying I agree with it. I actually kind of lean with what you're saying. What I'm saying is I understand what he's trying to say, right? Like, I understand, like, hey, look, I mean, Joe, let's just be honest here. Me and you both, when the ACC added teams from Stanford, or I mean, added these other teams, right? Like, we said this cross-country stuff is BS. Mm-hmm. Well, now we can't change what we say when it's USC versus Notre Dame, right? Like, we can't, like, if cross-country stuff is what we were talking about a year ago and why the ACC is doing absolutely stupid stuff, we can't change our tone now. You see what I'm saying?
I don't think that applies in this situation.
How does that not apply?
Because it's a... They're non-conference games. Like, we're talking about
a non-conference. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about the travel is what they're trying to get at.
I think we're going down a bit of a rabbit hole here.
Okay.
But I get what you're trying to say, but I don't think that those are the same. It's not the same conversation. The whole cross-conference, inter-conference cross-country travel is dumb because you have to do it multiple times a season. But when you're doing non-conference and it's a rival opponent or it's a big early season matchup or whatever it might be for promotional sake, there's nothing wrong with doing that. I mean, that's like a key piece to college football, and it's a key piece to branding and name recognition and recruiting, like so many different things. I don't know if those things are necessarily connected.
Fair. All right. We'll go through our top five. Also, the Egg Bowl is being moved to Friday. What I think it's setting up for Texas and why I think the SEC continues to pander to the University of Texas. Joe, I went absolutely stupid last night because I missed a lot of the LSU or SEC tournament. There was a really bad call, and I think the SEC is – look, Greg Sankey is the best commissioner in sports, at least in college sports, in my opinion. There are three things that he's royally messing up. Moving Ole Miss and Mississippi State on Thanksgiving night is going to be one of the biggest mistakes that he's going to make. Bottom line. And I think he's doing that to pander to get Texas and Texas A&M on Thursday for Thanksgiving, which we're going to watch both of them. Nobody goes into work on Friday. I mean, my wife goes shopping on Friday. Hey, you're going to let the grandparents watch the kids and I get to sit my fat ass on a recliner and eat leftovers, okay, and watch college football? I mean, give me a chubby, why won't you?
I'll wait to get my take on this, but it's okay to like the placement and that there's a good game going on that Friday, but no, I don't like it. I don't like the losing of tradition that we have here, and you said it perfectly. They're pandering to Texas.
Pandering to Texas. All right, we'll get to it. So we got a lot to discuss. Stay with us. We're going to get to a break here. Everybody do us a favor by hitting the like and share. Share to all those groups on Facebook. Share to all of those groups. If you are on the new trend on Facebook, you guys in the chat probably can help me out with what that is. If you're watching us, listening to us on YouTube, like, subscribe, notification bell, wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. Let's talk about our good friends over at betonline.ag, our top five defensive backs. We do that next. Stay with us. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way for you to wager on all of your favorite sports, contests, events, with the first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews for all the news for each league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, college sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports information for live, in-game betting, props, and futures. Head on over to BetOnline today and use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BELIEVE50, BLEAV50, to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's BetOnline.ag, BetOnline.ag. We're back! So, I will tell you this. The entire country on Saturday night at approximately 11 p.m. Central Standard Time. Mm-hmm. And in the state that you're currently in, by the way, in New Jersey, Louisiana will rise up as Dustin Poirier will knock out Islam Makhachev in the third round.
Wait, where's the fight?
In Jersey, Jersey City, Lafayette Street.
Which, I don't by know the why way, I didn't know this.
Which, by the way, okay, Lafayette, Louisiana is where Dustin Poirier is from. Dustin,
good the sign. Diamond.
And by the way, he's changing his walkout song. He's coming out to Rihanna, Shine Bright Like a Diamond. I'm telling you, I swear to God, Joe, if a man from Louisiana knocks out a Russian, people, I'm going to get banned on social media. Okay, I promise you.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Right now, I am going to lose my godforsaken mind, mainly due to the fact, like, Dustin's been a good friend. You know, he shared some stuff that we did for his charity, you know, like.
Great. Oh, it's at the Prudential Center. I know where it is.
You're right. Great yeah. Human being. He does the thing with the high school and the kids. Mm-hmm. We've donated to it. Or AYS has donated to it. I want him to. Joe, it's Rocky IV Louisiana edition.
All right. This isn't a UFC show. Let's.
I'm just saying.
Getting too fired up. You're getting a little too fired up, Blake.
He's going to knock that bitch out. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, God. I can't wait. I'm
are you really from New York?
I'm not. Ryan is an antagonist. Don't put his comments on the screen. He's Rack of Tits has more coherent comments than he does. All right, let's get to these lists.
All right, let's go with yours, Joe. We again, in case you've missed it, before I went on my Dustin Poirier ramble, Joe, we continue, and this is our last one, our top five position groups. Today, we end on DB. I started off by saying that I thought that this was the most difficult. I think that you agreed mm-hmm. with this. I do think that you can make an argument for four guys being at number one. But let's start off with your list. Who are your top five DBs in college football?
My top five. Number one, Will Johnson from Michigan, the cornerback. Safety, Malachi Starks at number two from Georgia. Number three is athlete Travis Hunter from Colorado. Number four, Caleb Downs, the safety from Ohio State. Sophomore safety, emphasis on sophomore. Number five, Ben Morrison, cornerback from Notre Dame. Who you got? Read yours, and then we can start.
Well, my number one is sophomore Caleb Downs, and I'll tell you why that doesn't matter in just a moment. Malachi Starks at number two, Will Johnson from Michigan at number three. I'm going to say this before we get rolling, but number four, I almost put Travis Hunter behind Ben Morrison, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but Travis Hunter at number four and Ben Morrison mm-hmm. at number five. Go ahead. Why do you hate that I have Caleb Downs at number one?
Okay,
if you say that it's just because he's a sophomore, I might lose my mind.
That's not the direct reason, but I think it's related. I really like Caleb Downs. I love Caleb Downs. He is one of the most freakish athletes in college football. And also, more importantly, the fact that he is a true freshman that played the way that he did for Alabama and had the impact that he did. The instincts, the range, what he was able to do as a true freshman in the SEC is just unheard of. We don't see stuff like that. So very clearly, before anyone gets pissed at me, Bama fans, remember I'm in your corner. Or no, wait, no, this isn't Bama. This is Ohio State.
I'll be Ohio State fans.
I do support Ohio State sometimes. As much as I like him, I think that guys like Will Johnson and Malachi Starks are equally as freakishly athletic, and they're ahead of him because they've been playing college football for a year longer. I don't think that's an insane thing to say that I have two guys ranked ahead of him because they've been playing the game longer and they have developed a little bit more than a kid who was just a freshman this past year.
That's it. That's what you got.
But that's not a bad take. Don't act like that's a bad take.
I didn't say it was a bad take. I just thought you would have more substance. I agree that there were times that he had freshman moments. I also would agree.
Wait. I didn't say he had issues.
I'm saying that he did. Okay. Like, I would agree that he had freshman moments. I'll give examples. When Malik Nabers hit him with a double move and he got burned. Okay. Like, all right. The best receiver in the country, in my opinion, hit you with a double move. All right, fine. What happened after that when he was shading Brian Thomas Jr.? I mean, Joe, there were a lot of times I remember in that game that they ran a lot of cover two, and he was on Brian Thomas Jr. a lot. Joe, I went back and watched that game last week. If you're watch AYS, you'll find out tonight. But was covering a guy one-on-one a lot and made a lot of plays on him. Same thing happened to him against Texas, but he also had massive plays versus Texas to start getting Bama back into the game. Joe, I think he's the best college football defender in the country, and I don't think it's remotely close.
That statement I disagree with, that we're going to go that far. Finish your point.
Okay, well, let me finish. I agree that he had moments, but I also think, for me, that name something that he doesn't do well above average. All these guys that are on this list, I've seen Malachi Starks really struggle in coverage. Very much struggle in coverage went up against Malik. Joe, again, you have a guy that we've seen against against the same players. Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr. Malachi Starks did not perform better than Caleb Downs. He did not.
Am I crazy? Was that not? Wait, did why am I feel like I'm having like a fever dream right now? Did LSU play Georgia this past year?
No,
we're not referencing shit from 2 years ago, Blake. But
it's the same argument that you're making about him being a sophomore.
This is where I'm being misunderstood here. So first of all, you're saying that you agree with me that I'm saying he has freshman moments. I didn't say that. What I'm trying to explain here is that he's really far along, and he's a really gifted player, way further along than we typically expect. I just like these other three guys slightly more than him. Like, we have to acknowledge that these guys are all also the three that I have ahead of them. Travis Hunter, Malachi Starks, and Will Johnson are all equally as rare of athletes.
Travis Hunter's not a better DB than him. He's not.
Okay, that I will concede, and I think that that's a different conversation,
which we will get into. All right. Okay. I don't disagree with Will Johnson, nor do I disagree with Malachi Starks. I'm with you. And I don't care that you have him above him. For me, though, when I watch him play, I don't know if there's anything that he does. Like, you know who I think he is? I think he's Minkah Fitzpatrick. I really do.
I think he's more talented than Minkah Fitzpatrick.
And he certainly might be. But if he is that, Joe, we're talking about one of the best safeties that we've seen in college football in some time, right? Like, we're talking about a safety that could, when he comes out, be a top five pick. He is that level of good. Experience, okay, whatever. But yes. I also remember, okay, multiple times in big games that he was the one that continued to show up and make plays.
I'm in an agreement with you here that, like, Everything that he does isn't just at like an above average level. Everything's like in the upper
I'm
category.
Being conservative.
I'm willing to go as far as to say that for a freshman, he was in the elite category in most of the things that he did. I just think you're really undervaluing Malachi Starks. And for a guy that's listed at 6'2", 200 pounds.
He's my number two.
You're making it seem like that, like he was inconsistent the way that you described him.
No, what I said was when both guys had the same opponents that they went against, one perform better, right? Like when we have common opponents and guys that they went up against, Tennessee is another one. Okay, he legitimately had better performances than Starks did. Joe, we can't,
I don't agree with that.
He had more tackles. He had more tackles for loss. He had legitimately every statistical category was better than him in. So you're using experience, okay, when I can legitimately look at him having better performances than Malachi Starks.
How do you disagree with that point? I don't make my decision. I like to make my decisions off the film that I watched and when I evaluated these guys. You know, like
So you watched film and you didn't see him make more plays when statistically we know that he did.
I think that Starks' value. Wait. Starks' value is far is not always going to be something that shows
very fair
because he is. And you mentioned that you weren't 100% all in on his coverage ability. I really think that Malachi Starks is a really gifted coverage player.
I do too.
Before we get to Starks, I just kind of want to round out the thoughts here on Caleb. Like to less on me arguing with you about him. I just want to talk the positives here. Him going to Ohio State, playing in that defense, very well coached defensive unit with Knowles. We've got Elks in the chat who's given a shit that we didn't bring up some of the other Ohio State DBs. We couldn't do a list of five Ohio State DBs. Those guys are good. They're top 15, but I don't know if I would necessarily put them in the same conversation as Downs and some of these other guys. But the unit that he is going to be playing in this upcoming year, Blake, is only going to set him up to be even better. I think that the ascension and the step forward is going to be that dramatic that what you're saying. After this season, and when James Pierce Jr. and Deion Walker and Malachi Starks and Will Johnson are gone and they're going to the NFL, we're going to be talking about pretty confidently that Caleb Downs is the best player in college football and the best defender.
That's what I just said.
I'm saying in 2025, though. I don't think he is right now. I think 2025 he will be.
He had a safety that had 107 tackles. 70 of them were solo. I mean, at some point, you got to take common opponents from the guys that.
Yeah.
So he was a better. Let's say it like this: you have Will Johnson at number one, right? Okay. Yes. Who was a more impactful player in the game when they faced off with one another?
Will Johnson was.
I vehemently disagree.
The whole defense, the whole Michigan defense, Junior Colson and Will Johnson, Mason Graham, the three of those guys took over that game. And more importantly, Will Johnson's a big reason why they won the national championship.
I'm not going to disagree with you there. But there were three crucial third downs that Caleb Downs made the tackle and then Michigan handed a punt on. Like, legitimately, when their offense could not get going – and they needed stands. Joe, he was their heartbeat last year. I mean, like, I'm not trying to be rude. I mean, we can say that Alabama was a lot of things last year, but they were a playoff team.
Yeah,
they took the national champion to the
wild. They had a great secondary.
They had a fantastic secondary. Yeah. Okay, and he was able to run, which it's going to be able to, and what he's going to be able to do the same at Ohio State this year because they have really good corners as well. Joe, he legitimately, down the stretch of the season, when he faced off against Georgia, when he faced off against Michigan, I think that I could still make the argument that he might have been the best player on the field at any given moment. Because he missed
look,
so
again,
much.
Again, I don't disagree with you on how gifted I think he is. I just think it's getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. If the three guys that I'd ranked ahead of him didn't exist or they were in the last draft class, I'd be agreeing with you right now. Like, well, I would be 1,000% agreeing with you. I just think it's such a rare year, as you mentioned in the open, that we're in this position where all of these guys are really freaking good. And I have to pay attention to the fact that, you know, that Will Johnson has ridiculous instincts for a corner who's 6'2 and 200 pounds and that Malachi Starks has the range to play sideline to sideline and the decision-making to come down and play against the run and to also take the ball out of the air better than anybody else in college football. I really think that Caleb Downs is going to get there, Blake. I just don't want to crown him as the number one player just yet when there's already so much freaking talent in this defensive back group.
Very fair. And look, I'll go to your number one here, okay, in Will Johnson. Joe, honestly, And I don't think that this is even really bad debate on this, or maybe we will have one. I don't know. I think Will Johnson, when it comes down to it, is the best cover guy in this list. Like, 100%. Yeah. I mean, Joe, at some point, the interceptions don't lie. The passes defended don't lie. I mean, the only thing that I would push back, which he's a corner, Joe, he's a very unwilling tackler at times, right? Very unwilling. Like, for example, I went and looked at this today. When who's your boy, the running back from Alabama? God dog it.
Wardell Williams?
Was it Williams? No, I don't think it was Williams.
Oh, no. Who was the kid who got drafted this year that went? I'm not
regardless.
Yeah. Yep.
I felt like he shied away a little, like try to make some like off hip arm tackles, like didn't really want to get engaged. Now, there were times that I thought that he did do well in tackling, but I'd be being nitpicky there. I think he's the best cover guy on this list. I don't think it's remotely close.
It's kind of funny trying to have the debate of safety versus corner. And I think that kind of makes this exercise a little bit more fun because it's more of a challenge to sit here and do that than to just rank corners and to rank safeties. I think, though, what you're talking about, the coverage ability and the impact that Will Johnson has out of any of the corners, and there's going to be a lot of really good corners this year. Denzel Burks, Takerio Davis from at Arizona, Prysock at Washington. There's a very long list that's going to be had for these corners. The coverage ability, the mobility for his size is unique. But the biggest thing, and I've tweeted about this a ton, I've tweeted about this so much with Will Johnson. The guy jumps routes before the ball's even thrown.
I agree. Like, the touchdown he had last year was insane. I agree with that.
The one that he had on Kyle McCord on Marvin Harrison Jr. jumped the route before McCord threw the football, and McCord just threw the ball no matter what. And then the pick that he had, or I think it was just a PBU because he dropped it against Washington, was pretty crazy because he came down on the football. He found a gap where Michael Penix didn't see him, and not a lot of guys can make that play. So the coverage ability, the ball skills, all that stuff is so, so rare for a guy like Will Johnson. And I don't think there should be much of a debate. I know that Elks is having a conniption in the chat because we're not saying that Burks is the better coverage player, but you got to admit, rivalry or not, Will Johnson is a unicorn when it comes to his ability to cover.
He is. And look, I do think he had a bad game last year versus Maryland. Personally, I'm not going to get into
Denzel Burke. I let Elks confuse me. It is Denzel Burke. Ryan corrected us in the chat. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, I see that. He did have a bad game. Well, both corners had bad games versus Maryland. Okay. I do think that he did benefit a little bit more than, and I think it's going to be interesting with Will Johnson. You know why I didn't put him at one? I was afraid of what he would look like without the pass rush that he's going to get. Right, like, I mean, that D line he had last year is.
Wait, you're talking about Johnson at. You're talking about Will Johnson.
Yeah, Michigan.
Who did they lose?
Didn't they have two guys on their defensive line not get drafted?
Yeah, but like, they're still bringing back.
They're losing. They're losing 27 sacks.
They're still bringing back.
I get that.
Mason Graham. Kenneth Grant and two edge guys. Like, I don't know. I don't, I think that they were so deep. I don't think that stuff's going to impact.
Yeah. Them. But Joey,
I know what you're saying, but I just don't know if that's going to really hurt them.
Yeah. But when you lose 27 sacks off your defense, that's a big deal.
Let me
ask you this question. What won Michigan a national title game versus Washington?
Their linebackers.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Defensive line. Sorry. Okay. I don't know. I thought Alabama. Alabama was junior.
Their D line got after
Penix.
I think Johnson does benefit being able to jump routes and do things, mainly due to the fact that of the intensive pass rush that he is given in front of him. Now, I'm not saying he's not a good cover guy, but what happens if there isn't a pass rush available to him? Can he? I mean, like, some of these guys are getting beat because their pass rush isn't there too now.
I don't know if I'm going to go that far to be worried about that. Can we talk about Travis Hunter though? I want to talk.
Okay,
about Travis
we will. But all I would say here is that's why he got beat against Maryland. If we're being frank, they couldn't get a pass rush. All I'm saying, Tagovailoa ripped that ass alive when there wasn't a pass rush. All right,
the whole team didn't show up to play that game. It's
all right, but that's my point. Okay. All right, getting to Travis Hunter. Here's a hot take: he's a better receiver than DB.
I disagree. I think he's going to be a better defensive back than he is. Okay, so this is where it gets so goddamn complicated. I don't know what position he is. I legitimately don't. He's gifted as shit, though. He's really gifted. He's really freaking gifted, and I think you could put him at any position on defense, and he's going to figure out a way to play it. They need to let him commit to something and play something in space.
I agree with you.
Why do you think he's a better receiver? Is because they called on him to do it, and he had more.
Well, I just think he's more explosive. I think he's. I mean, I do think his instincts for the ball, I think he high points the ball well. Now, it doesn't make him a bad DB, but I do think that there comes a point where, like, Joe, when he's out there, he's pretty freaking electric offensively. Can I ask you this question, though, about him being a DB? Can you name a top-flight wide receiver that he's gone against? Because he got hurt versus Colorado State. The next week versus Oregon, he's not there. So
That's a very good point.
So Troy Franklin and the boys, like, he doesn't go up against them. I still think the jury might be a little out on him in reference to what happens. Well, let me ask you, or let me say it like this. What happens if he goes up against Aruma Dunze or Malik Nabers, those guys from last year? What would have happened?
Well, that's a really good point. We didn't have exposure to him getting to match up with any of the premier talent in the Pac-12, and also him playing both sides of the football also kind of conflates this conversation, because we don't have enough of a sample size of him just playing. We actually don't have any sample size of him just playing DB for a full game. I really wish that the mentality with him was play defensive back, and then important series, we're going to bring you on the field, and we're going to give you a jet sweep. We're going to throw you a screen. We're going to throw you a seam down the sideline, whatever it might be. Him being on the field should be more situational, because I kind of worry, not that it's hurting his development, but it's hurting our ability to understand what his value is going to be. The NFL is not going to have him play both positions. They're not. Deion Sanders is going to allow him to play both sides of the football because they have a really good relationship. He's also the best player on the field, and they just need to get him onto the field sometimes to win. But if he goes to the NFL and tells him he wants to play both, most of them might be like, oh, that's great. Maybe we'll do it every so often, but you're playing corner or you're playing receiver. I just think, though, for him to have like the proper route running nuance and detail required to be a receiver draft pick, I don't know if he's getting enough reps to necessarily to be able to produce that. That's why I think he's so natural at corner. Like, the play he had against TCU is consistently reshown over and over
again. Name a receiver at TCU that was worth a damn.
And again, it's a great counterpoint to, like, where does he fit in the
conversation? Now, I agree with Elks in the chat. This is one of my points here. Joe, against Stanford, Amaynor, had 13 catches, 294 yards, and 3 touchdowns. 2 of those touchdowns that he caught were on Travis Hunter. So, by the way, and to your point, though, okay, to flip that, Travis Hunter had 13 catches, 140 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So
it's a very weird debate. It's a really weird conversation to try to have.
That's why I think he's better there, because he's already so gifted there. Joe, what happens if he plays receiver?
Well, okay, but so here's my whole thing with this, though.
Well, let me ask it like this. If he were with anybody else besides Deion and he played receiver, would we have him in our top 5 wide receiver core?
I don't know. I actually don't. Like, I don't think I have an answer to that question, if I'm being completely honest. But I can say this, though. it is easier for a really good athlete in college to succeed on offense and specifically at receiver, right? It's easier for a guy like that to do that.
Fair,
that doesn't translate to the NFL.
Because so many of them are stat heavy.
And it's also why sometimes the most productive receivers in college football aren't always the best receivers in the NFL. I mean, Laquon Treadwell, Treylon Burks is another one that was brought up in the chat with the Tennessee Titans and previously with Arkansas. The production doesn't always translate. I just think
they got on DK Metcalf for not having the production. Now look at his big ass.
Right. The inverse seems to be applicable here with receivers. It just comes down to, though, I don't really know what he is. Like, I just don't know what position he is, and I don't know if there is really an answer. Like, we could sit here. This is one thing that you could sit at the bar with your buddies, and you could just argue about it for 2 hours because there isn't an answer. We could keep pulling examples.
I mean, the problem I have, Joe, is he scores a game early. He scores a touchdown early in that game, scores a touchdown late. He did that all last year, and they were better offensively when he was out there. I get what you're saying. I've also seen him play against really good, I say really good defense. I've seen him do more things at one position than the other. Now, the diving interception that he had is insane. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying he's a bad DB. He's in my top five, right? I mean, I don't know where else to put him. But I think he's an interesting case. Yeah. All right, let's wrap this up with Malachi Starks and Ben Morrison. Your thoughts on them?
Yeah, we already talked about Starks, but to kind of round that out on thoughts on him, I said earlier, for his physical profile, for him to be able to cover sideline to sideline the way that he can, to be able to defend the run the way he can, the way that he can tackle, the instincts are where I get really excited about him, because not only is he able to fly all over the field like a bat out of hell and 100 miles an hour, but he's able to make those decisions before plays really materialize and come together. I think that he is going to be a bona fide top 15 pick. And if he wasn't a safety, and if there wasn't this bias against picking safeties, he'd probably be a top 3 pick. He is that gifted of a player. And the national championship run, If we were to sit here and point at one guy on Georgia's defense, just point right at him if they were all standing in front of us and say, who is going to be the biggest reason defensively that they win a national title? It would be Malachi Starks because of his impact.
All right, let me inverse that. I think he got exposed against Bama this past year. What do you think I'm about to say?
I watched the Bama game. I don't think that he played that bad of a game. I think the perception of Georgia playing a bad game
In fairness, Tommy Rees attacked him. Tommy Rees.
I got tapes on film that I shared where he broke up passes where they tried to attack him deep. I don't.
He also gave up 3 drag routes where he's supposed to be in coverage and get smoked. So I agree with what you're saying, that his instincts – and I hate using this word. I do think his instincts are elite. Okay. I do think that he arguably in this draft will be the best safety coming off the board. I think he might be the best DB overall, maybe, potentially. Yeah. I'm not far off with you there. I just think that the 2 SEC championship games that he played in really stick in my mind very badly. Like, I mean – Joe's in one-on-one coverage with Malik Nabers. He gets roasted. He's got multiple. I've watched that game.
He was a true freshman.
Oh, okay. Freshman. All right. Well, you were saying the same shit about Caleb Downs.
Okay, but Caleb Downs wasn't perfect last year, and I don't have the same context that you have.
The same for Isaiah Bond. So when I have it twice, there does come up like I don't know what it is. However, Joe, there's not a better tackler on this list than this kid.
Yeah, I agree with that. I completely agree with that.
Not a one. The kid is full pedal to the metal. Risk it for the biscuit. That's what she said. And he is going to go right after it. Athlete per athlete, I mean, dude's special, man. I can't argue with you. I just don't know why, for me, why both of those games stick out every time I think of them. Maybe it's because, you know, like, I covered one of them very heavily and watched it a lot, and we did film breakdowns on Mondays about it. Maybe it is. But Joe, he might be a top two player in the SEC? I don't really know if that's even debatable. Like, I think he would be a headline, and he's a leader. I think the last thing that I would say about Starks here, Kirby talks about him and, like, the leadership more than the on-field play, which is so big for me, too.
Leadership's definitely noticeable, and I think that that's always going to be a position that's going to get hyped up by Kirby with his background. Thoughts on Morrison, though, before we move on to talking about the
only reason I put him in there was because you're a Notre Dame fan.
Oh, you suck. You suck. That's lame. That better not be your reason why you put him in there.
The only reason I got him in there, I don't think that he can cover good.
Shut up. You're just
I don't think he's got good size.
Stop.
I don't think he's got good range.
Look, hey, the size thing I can concede because he's a little too light right now. He's listed at 185. He's probably playing it at 170. He's a bad tackler.
All those things I was saying were actually just the negative of what I thought of the kid. I don't think that he's physical enough. I just think
I'm gonna cut you off because you're just saying shit to say shit because you know it's gonna. You know what? You do the same bit that I do where you say something, you know, in jest, tongue in cheek. No one's gonna clip you. But if I like, what's the stupidest thing I could say right now that I could totally let somebody clip and pull out of context?
Yeah, Ben Morrison is or have
Ben Morrison's gonna be the first overall pick. Like, that's not going to get clipped and or that could get clipped and run all over the place because people take me way too seriously when I joke around. But to actually talk about him, Blake, he needs to be more physical. He needs to add a little bit more weight. Outside of that, though, I think he's got the best ball skills maybe out of any of these guys that we're talking about. The way that he has gone up and attacked the football in the air, despite maybe not being the most physical guy in contested situations, it's pretty special to me. I think if he put on like 10 more pounds, he would go from being really good in coverage and a liability in contested spots and as a tackler to being an elite corner.
I agree with you. I do agree with Elks on one thing. I do think he holds a lot, which let me say this. This is the perception, not saying it's me. I think the kid's very fast. The perception is when a guy gets very handsy, it's because he's getting beat speed-wise, right? Like that
because
is
because he's not physical enough and he's relying too much that. On,
that's
on
what I was
yanking guys down. Yeah,
I do think if there is something that I think that he's got to get better at, he's got to be more physical. I do think Will Johnson might be right now a better cover guy than him, but I don't think that Morrison had the pass rush that Ben Morrison had. So with that being said, if Ben Morrison was if it was inverse, and I do think that the roles might be flipped here. I think he's Nate Wiggins from last year. I see so much Nate
Wiggins.
Yeah,
that's actually he's a little shorter than, but I could
he's a little bit shorter, but they're the exact same weight. They have the exact same comp in reference to being handsy. Mm-hmm. I think they run very similar. I think it's kind of weird how a lot of similarities that they had with one another. Now, I'm going to bring this up, Joe, before we get to the Egg Bowl thing. Frable says Ben Morrison is the best cornerback in college football, and it's not close. BMO Morrison locked down Marvin Harrison Jr. twice. He held MAJ and Addison Flowers Nacua Rice to 32 yards per game and didn't give up a touchdown in any of them.
Just to look,
in fairness, Marvin Harrison Jr. was hurt.
Yes. I understand the sentiment. And I taped something with Ryan today and we did our scouting report episode on him. And I said the statement that if he added more weight, got stronger, he could be in the conversation as the best corner in the draft and in college football. But the problem is that he is a one-sided player right now. So no, I cannot commit to him. And as much as I support Notre Dame guys on this show, I can't commit to him being the number one corner because tackling is important in college football for corners.
Yeah, there's a lot is important in any level.
Oh, wait, we got another one. Well, Johnson got cooked by Marvin Harrison Jr. Ben Morrison didn't. He didn't get cooked by him. They both have plays on film where Marvin Harrison Jr. made an unbelievable contested catch.
And thank you, Frable, for both the
– Yes, thank you. Will Johnson had more help on snaps. Will Johnson holds like an MF. BMO is sauce 2.0. Freeman found it. Yeah, but BMO also got called for holding stuff against Marvin Harrison Jr. as well.
Well, and you can't use the Marvin Harrison thing when Marvin Harrison had a high ankle sprain.
Yeah.
Right. Fravel, I appreciate the super chats. Here's what I would say though, and it goes back to the point that I just had here. Joe, I legitimately think that if the roles were inverse with Johnson, I actually do agree with Fravel here. I think if, and this was to my point earlier about Will Johnson, I do think Will Johnson benefited from having an elite pass rush.
Oh, that, yeah, okay. That part, yes, but I don't agree with what you said earlier where...
No, but that's exactly what I said. If Ben Morrison was on Michigan and had that pass rush, I think we would be inverse here. The only problem that you have is that one guy's 2 inches taller than the other.
Sure. Right. Sorry, I got distracted by that. There's so many comments that are coming through now in the... I don't think that he got cooked. I don't think that cooked it. Neither guy got cooked. Okay. Neither guy got cooked, but they gave up plays or penalties to Marvin Harrison Jr.
Well, in fairness, Marvin Harrison ran a lot of drag routes and Michigan played zone.
Yeah.
They didn't go man to man, man to man. That's off there.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway.
Let's talk about the Egg Bowl before we get out
of here. All right. Joe, the Egg Bowl is getting moved to Friday, and I think it's for a reason that maybe the state of Mississippi won't like. It's getting moved to Friday, in my opinion, because they're trying to put Texas and Texas A&M on Thanksgiving. Your thoughts about the Egg Bowl?
I think what you said earlier is relevant. I think that it is fair to say that I like the fact that I can now watch this game on Friday, because think about how many times on Thursday – on Thanksgiving and you're leaving your relative's house or you're comatose on the couch and you fall asleep watching it. And I'm a big college football fan and I try not to let that happen. And these things get in the way and I'll sit and watch it in the car or whatever, but God, the tradition sucks that we're just getting rid of this. I saw somebody tweet out that this is just the future with the commercialization of college football. I don't think a lot of people realize how non-commercialized college football was. TV revenue sponsors are going to really, really dominate. And by the way, that's something that we didn't even talk about today that we maybe should talk about on Sunday, how logos are now going to be featured on jerseys.
I put that in the thing. Can you imagine?
Yeah, look, this is just another example of it, though, the game being moved, because apparently you kind of have this not hunch, but it seems like it's likely that the Texas A&M game could be moved to that slot.
Hold on. I don't have a hunch.
Oh, okay. You know it's going to get moved.
I'll put sourcing behind it. I 100% believe, because they're asking Elko all week about that game being moved to Thanksgiving, and he said, we'll go outside in a cow pasture and play. The only reason Feinbaum asked those questions and ask Trev Alberts Elko those questions is mainly due to the fact that they know it's getting moved. They're pandering to Texas.
Okay.
And you know what? Shame on Greg Sankey for doing that. Ole Miss and Mississippi State are the two oldest teams in this conference. Okay? To bring in a team because it makes you more revenue is bullshit. You know what you can do? Here's a thought. Let them play at the same time, or put one game at five.
Oh, I don't want that. I don't want them to play at the same time
because
it's just a little brother of one of the games.
You put another one there. You used to put the Egg Bowl versus and LSU versus Arkansas. Do what you did with LSU versus Arkansas. Have one at 2:30, then have one at night, and then you know what you do every year? You flip flop them.
Play the damn game. That game should just be played on Saturday. Like, I just don't like this, it being thrown in there where, like you're talking about, why we're swapping these out. It's not like the Thursday game was like a nothing. Georgia Tech. If it was Georgia Tech that was the game that was getting swapped, I'd be like, cool, I don't give a shit. Or South Carolina Clemson, like, cool, I don't really care. That's a cross-conference rivalry, like, tough shit if you make a move. But this is a tradition. This is a tradition that we're getting rid of.
It might be the most bitter rival that people don't give credit for. Do you hear these kids singing?
Yeah, so much crazy shit.
Do you really?
I can hear it a little bit.
Where are they singing?
I can't hear what they're singing. I can just hear
Happy them. Birthday.
Oh, whose birthday is it that you're missing?
My niece's birthday.
Oh, yeah, she'll live. But you're right. Some of the best moments in college football have come out of this game, and it's ridiculous. You and I are going to be in our 80s, sitting in a rocking chair in a group home, talking about how this game used to mean something and how they used to play on Thanksgiving, and our grandkids are going to be telling us, "Oh, I'm sure, Grandpa, that the Egg Bowl was on Thanksgiving. I'm sure that it was." It's bullshit that this is going to die the way that it did.
I 100% agree. Remember last year's Egg Bowl? That's what I'm going to miss.
I always remember the one where, God, which Ole Miss receiver was it that did the pissing the dog?
It was, God damn it. Elijah Moore with the Jets.
Yeah. That was one of the best moments. You know
what's so crazy about that? Him doing that made Ole Miss lose for them to get Lane Kiffin. Because if they don't lose that game, they're not going to fire your boy.
Yeah. I think you're right. Wait, I'm trying to
Luke. God dog it, Luke. Whatever his last name was.
Was it 2022? No. Or was it 2021?
No, it might have been 2019 because I think Kiffin.
Oh, sorry, 2019 where it was 21-20. Yeah, I think that's.
They missed the extra point.
Yeah.
God, man. Matt Luke, that's your boy, Matt Luke.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was Elijah Moore that fake pissed on the – and then remember when Ole Miss – it's the meme that's on there, Ole Miss recovered to fumble in that same game and your boy was waving to the sideline cam like he's on the ball and he's like,
yeah, wait. Oh, God, it was a defender. What defender was that? Yeah,
it was a defensive lineman. I forget his name too. Look, man, I just don't like – look, there's so many things that are changing. Like some things I wish that could remain the same. And look, I will say this, and I make no friends when I say this. I do think that Greg Sankey has three big issues on his hand.
Okay.
Number one, I think he's horrible at scheduling. Like, flipping the schedule next year is lazy. Okay. Like, for example, I'll use LSU. Okay. LSU still owed that Texas rematch that COVID got away from.
Yeah.
And Louisiana people have not forgotten about that. Like, putting the fans up in the nosebleed.
Or the Georgia the
putting Georgia, Joe Burrow's dad. By the way, they moved Burrow's dad to the top row or close to the top row of the nosebleed section. So okay, like those are things. Number two is officiating and umpiring, and number three, pandering for money. I think those are the three things that he's been awful with. And then the day he comes out, it's not an alliance that I have with the Big Ten. We're just have a partnership. So you have an alliance. It's the same definition.
Yeah, the transparency has been annoying lately. Before we get out of here, to throw one thing in your face in this conversation, you have said to me when we talk about NIL that you can't limit capitalism. That's what this is.
No, but fair. However, it's not as if that they're going to lose money if they keep Texas and Texas A&M on Friday. They're not going to lose money from that.
They're not going to, but as somebody who understands how these broadcasting executives...
The SEC gets no more money from moving those games whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, there's a potential to make more money.
You know what else, though? NIL, players are finally getting paid. That was an issue. Right? Like that. Hold on. You're going to have this discussion. So hold on.
Yeah, but that's not what the discussion is. The point is that we can't get mad about capitalism.
You have two schools. You have two schools that have been in this conference for 100 years, and you're pandering to a school that's never played a game in this conference.
That's understandable, but like we can't get upset over what's going to generate more money and more eyeballs.
But it's not generating more money.
It is. I bet you there will be better viewership on the Texas A&M game. As much as I hate to admit that, there's going to be more viewership on that game than there would be on
Ole Miss. How does the SEC make more money off of that? The deal's locked in for the next decade.
But ESPN makes more money, and they have the sway in the decision to move next game.
So basically, you pulled your pants down, you bend over to ESPN.
They have the control of the schedule, like the time slots. They're well, the ones who are selling the time slots. So yeah.
Peter says you're so retarded. It's crazy.
Why did you put?
Well, you can't say we're retarded and not put in a great sentence. And number two, have you seen your profile pic?
Yeah, you spelled your wrong. Good job, Peter.
Peter looks like the guy that like dresses up as Halloween with his girlfriend, and he goes, and his girlfriend's dressed up as a pumpkin, and he goes, pumpkin eater. He wears a shirt that says pumpkin eater, and she's dressed up as a pumpkin. That's what he looks like. Peter, pumpkin eater. All right.
Ugh, that's so stupid. All right.
Also very true. Don't come in here talking shit. I'll talk shit with the best of them. Peter, pumpkin eater. We'll see y'all on Sunday. Peace.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.